Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about Social Security. And who better to talk about that with than Lester Austin, Public Affairs Specialist, Social Security. Good morning, Lester.
Good morning. It's always a great pleasure and a great opportunity to be here. Talk about the issue of Social Security as far as where it's been, where it's at, and where it's going.
Okay, good to hear from the ever-shy Lester. And John Elliott, been a while, John.
Yes.
Retired Fed, retired seminar presenter, still email provider, knower of many and all things federal, as well as Social Security. So we got two experts here, and I'm Bob Lines, and I'm more of an accountant. I was born an accountant, but I'd like to think of myself as a planner, not financial. Anyway, so I think we got the bases covered here. We got benefits, bucks, and we got taxes, but the focus is going to be on Social Security benefits. So, Lester, let's start off with something easy and then nothing hard, but let's drill beyond the easy. How does somebody qualify for Social Security?
A person would have to work and earn the right to be entitled to a Social Security benefit. Those individuals that are born 1930 and later need to have 10 years of work, 10 years of work under Social Security. And 10 years of work under Social Security would be equivalent to 40 quarters of coverage. 40 quarters of coverage. So this year, a person has earned $1,160 in order to be entitled to one quarter of coverage. So therefore, for a person to earn a minimum of four quarters of coverage this year, they must earn a minimum of $4,640.
Could I ask you a question? Does that have to be in each quarter of the calendar year, or in theory, could they make that much in one day and be covered for the whole year?
And that's a very good quarter, because prior to 1978, a person had to person had to make at least $50 per quarter in each quarter. Effective January 1, 1978, the law changed. The law stated that once a person had earned the minimum amount necessary to earn a quarter coverage, in 1978, it was $250. The law also stipulated and it stated, effective in that year, that once a person had earned $1,000, whether it was the first day, first week, first month, middle of the year, last month, last week, or the last day, but once they had earned $1,000, they'd be entitled to four quarters of coverage. So now the minimum amount to earn a quarter of coverage, $1,160. Once they earn their $4,680, $40, they're entitled to four quarters of coverage, whether it's the first day or the last day of the year.
They're okay. Sometimes called credits, so they're interchangeable terms. So if somebody in the audience has heard, well, what's a credit? That's a quarter. It's the same thing, just a different name. What's the, for 2013, I kind of lost track. What's the total amount you'd have to earn in 2013 to get all four credits?
Minimum $4,640. Okay. And just like you said, John, sometimes they call it credits. They also call it periods. And depending on in what generation you're talking about, they have those different terminologies. We call them, just here speaking to the American audience, quarters. You can only earn four quarters a year. So a person born 1930 and later, they must have 40 quarters of coverage. Those quarters can be sporadic or they can be consecutive, but the bottom line is they must have 40 quarters of coverage.
So if you do the math, it takes 10 years.
10 years of work.
10 years of work.
Okay. Now, when it changed in, what did you say, 1978?
Effective in 1978.
And it was $250?
Prior to 1978, it was $50 per quarter.
Yeah.
Effective in 1978, the amount necessary to earn a quarter escalated from the $50 to the $250. And also the law stipulated with the passing that effective in 1978, that once a person had earned $1,000, then they would be eligible for four quarters
of
coverage.
But
the important part is that that fourth quarter will not be accredited into their account until October 1.
All righty.
The beginning of the quarter period.
Now.
So once you hit 40 credits or quarters, whatever you want to call them, it's game on. You've established eligibility for a Social Security benefit, and it doesn't matter beyond that. Once you've hit the 40 credit threshold, you're done.
Once you have hit a minimum of 40 quarters, then you are eligible for Social Security retirement benefits at the appropriate retirement age, being 62 years of age or older. But disability, it's another insured status that would have to go along with that.
Okay. Just so we don't drive our folks crazy, 10 years gives you the 40 quarters. 10 years gives you the 40 credits, right?
That's correct.
All right. Even if we just work one day. Now, today or this year, 2013, the minimum amount that gets you the four credits is how much?
$4,640.
Okay. So here's a question. I'm not trying to be unfair. If it was $1,000 in 1978, and now it's how much?
$1,160 per quarter. It was $250 in 1978, just okay, to bring perspective.
Okay, but now it's how much 1,000, a year?
$1,040 for the year?
Yeah.
$4,640.
Okay. So it's increased substantially.
That's correct.
But has it increased because of legislation, or has it increased because it's indexed to inflation?
This was done by legislation from Congress.
Okay. Now, just you know, so if somebody's sitting there saying, well, wait a minute, it's gone up an awful lot, but of course it's been an awful lot of years. It's been 35 years since they changed the law. So inflation is certainly going to increase.
Actually, inflation since about the mid to late 70s has quadrupled.
Yeah.
That's about right.
Yeah. And this also plays a part.
Okay. Now, we're here to answer your phone calls as well, 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. So we started out, we got our bases covered, then the magical question is, once I've hit my goal to get the 10 years, 40 credits, whatever you want to call it, when do I apply? Or well, when can I apply? Let's do that. Isn't there an age minimum that I have to be before I can walk in your door?
The earliest that a person can file for retirement benefits are 3 months before their 62nd birthday. 62 is when a person can first begin to receive their Social Security benefits. We encourage people to file 3 months in advance. And guess how the best way to file for Social Security benefits are?
Online.
www.socialsecurity.gov. www.socialsecurity.gov. And I would encourage folks to click on it, stick on it, and stroll through it.
Do that
it's
again, slow.
It's a lot of information.
Do it again. Click.
I want them to click on it, to stick on it, and stroll through it. Because there's so much information there for the American public. And even though full retirement age has gone up, in other words, it's gone up like this. For a person born 1937 and earlier, full retirement age is 65. For those individuals born 1937 and earlier. Then it begins to escalate. Person born 1941, 65, 8 months. 1942, 65, 10 months. Those individuals born between 1943 and 1954, full retirement age is 66. And it continues to go up. To those individuals born 1960 and later, full retirement age is 67. Now, think of it like this. When Social Security first started in 1935, on August the 14th, 1935 is when the law was signed. Life expectancy was 60 to 65. Life expectancy now is 80 to 85. So you got a lot of people living longer, working longer. But they can first file for retirement benefits at age 62. We encourage them to file 3 months in advance.
All righty. Now, if somebody goes in at the earliest date, whatever that might be, isn't there a restriction that if they get Social Security benefits and they also are working, self-employed, they have what's called earned income, isn't there a reduction of the Social Security benefit based on the dollar magnitude of the earnings?
Well, we have what is called the earnings test. The earnings test is applicable in this manner. For individuals that are receiving Social Security benefits under their full retirement age, this year they can earn $15,120. And when we talk about earnings, we're talking about an employee-employer situation or a person being self-employed. So if they have earnings greater than $15,120 for every $2 they earn over that amount, we want them to reimburse us with $1. Now, in the year in which a person turns their full retirement age, this year they can earn $40,080. In the year in which they turn their full retirement age, $40,080. For every $3 they go over that amount, we want them to reimburse us with $1. Once a person reaches their full retirement age, they can work and earn as much as they want.
Okay. So that full retirement age is going to vary from a low of 66 currently to up to maybe 68.
67.
67.
For those individuals born 1960 and later, the full retirement age is age 67. Now, look at that group between 1943 and 1954. If they elect to take the benefits instead of 66, they want to take it early at 62, then they're going to have a 25% reduction in that 100% benefit payable to them.
Okay. So I get all this down, because I'm not taking notes. I'm trying to remember. I have to have 10 years of coverage, if you will. Some people call it quarters. Some people call it credits. But let's call it 10 years. And okay. It has to be a certain amount or higher to get the full benefit, if you will, the full credit, correct?
That person would have to earn, is no minimum or maximum. To earn a quarter of coverage is $1,160. To earn four quarters of coverage this year, they must earn a minimum $4,640. Any amount that they earn over that, any quarters over the 40, the quarters, as long as you work, have earnings, you're going to pay into Social Security. When the benefit is computed as far as what you are going to be entitled to, is based on what you have paid into Social Security.
Okay, so we got now the keys to the door. And we come in, and we can't click, stick, and stroll, so we come and talk to Lester. Now, Lester can't talk to everybody, but he can be on the air to everybody. And Lester, I think I qualify. Now, Lester can't and shouldn't be given advice as to whether they claim it at 62 or 3 or whether they wait till their full retirement age, because that wouldn't be right. So somebody has to scratch their head and say, well, I'm still working and I'm going to make more than what Lester mentioned was the minimum, where they start to lose it, not forever, but until they hit their, quote, full retirement age. So somebody might say, well, I'm going to stay working. And now you have this thing called phased retirement, where somebody might still make more than the minimum, and they're not going to get any Social Security.
Well, if a person's going to earn more than that $15,120 of earnings, then most likely they will not want to begin to receive their Social Security benefits, because if they elect to receive it and they're going to be earning more than that, then what we're going to do is look at the amount that they're going to earn. And we're going to say right now we can't pay them any benefits. So they're going to be suffering an unnecessary reduction in that benefit because they filed for it. And we're going to put them in suspense because their earnings are too great.
Okay.
So they will want to wait until they stop working or reduce their working to maybe part-time.
All right. So we travel on a little bit further, and now we've reached that magic full retirement age, and it's going to vary depending on our birth date. But now we can go to Social Security and still make as much as we humanly can from earned income, salary, or small business, and we're not affected. And we get to Social Security, and we say, boy, this is a good thing. But
remember, Mom said, watch those bearing gifts. Watch those bearing gifts. Because just as you have indicated, you can work, earn as much as you want, and still get your Social Security. That's a great thing, right?
Yes.
Now, the situation that will exist there is that if you're an individual and you have taxable income of $25,000 or greater, or you are a couple and have taxable income of $32,000 or greater, your Social Security benefit is taxable. Just the Social Security benefit can be taxable 50 to 85%.
Okay, now, everybody listen to what Lester said, but let's be clear with what Lester said. Not that you weren't clear. Let's say somebody's Social Security benefit was $10,000. I'm picking a number, and people can multiply that by whatever they like. All righty? And in your example, probably most of our listeners are going to be in that 85% category. All righty? So that doesn't mean an 85% tax. You didn't say that, but some people hear it as that. So they would have to pay tax on $8,500 times whatever their tax rate is. But I would say that's very tax efficient. I've said this more than a few times on the show. It's 15% non-taxable. And generally speaking, it's non-taxable at the state level, not in all states, but in many. So you're good to mention that, very good to mention that. But people, when they hear the 85%, they think it's an 85% tax.
On their total earnings.
Yeah, it's not.
And it's just on their Social Security.
Yeah.
And just like you, asked the question early, when is it best for a person to receive their Social Security? This is a personal decision that one must make. They must understand that Social Security is a 42% replacement rate of their pre-retirement earnings. Social Security is only one leg of the three-legged stool. So with your savings and with your annuitants from your job, along with Social Security, you're going to have a firm and solid stool to sit on. Now, if you don't make the financial arrangements that are necessary, then you might have to retire to go back to work. So you want to make sure, listening to shows like this on Federal News Radio for your benefits, it's great for one to understand that this is what is necessary in order for them to make sure that their plan is correct.
Okay. Now I've got the key to the door. I can go into the door without worry that I would lose any of my Social Security benefits at my full retirement age. Let's call that 66. Now I got to scratch my head again because I'm reading all the stats that are telling me I'm 66. I got a good chance to live till forever. Not till forever, but I'm a lot longer than what I thought when I was younger. And if I wait till, what is it, 70?
70, at age 70.
And 70 I go in, my Social Security really pops, doesn't it?
Exactly, because what happens is, in other words, you said, okay, here I am at full retirement, age 66. I'm going to keep on working. So I don't want to be paying those taxes on my Social Security benefit, so I would rather leave it there. If a person decides to leave it there, for each year after the full retirement age, there will be an 8% increase over that 100% benefit. So if you look at the group 43 to 54, 66 is full retirement age, at age 70, they will have a 32% increase over that 100% benefit.
All righty, now for the fellow bean counters and analytical types listening to the show, somebody might say, well, listen, yeah, I just don't know what's promised to me. I'm going to go in and I don't need the money for whatever reason, if the person is lucky enough to say that. But if I took my Social Security, and as Lester very accurately mentioned, you are going to pay taxes on it. So in theory, I pay taxes on it and I save the money for 4 years. All right, but I'm still taking it. Now, if I had not done that and I'd waited to 70, I'm going to get a lot more. So again, in theory, in order to me to be whole, I could take from the savings that I've set aside because I elected to take it at 66. And then probably for 12 years or so, I didn't do anything bad. And there's a crossover point where maybe I should have waited to 70, but you know, who knows?
And this is a again, a personal decision that a person has to make. But at least they got all the ducks in a row. They got making sure that they crossed every T, dotted every I, left no stone unturned in determining what is best for them and their spouse's situation. And I know somebody's thinking about this. And just let me just clear this up right now. If you decide to take that reduced benefit and then later on you say, well, let me pay all that money back. In other words, you reach age 70 and say, I want to pay all the money back I got from Social Security because I know I'm going to live to be 100. And it used to could be done. But now a person has 1 year, from the date they signed that initial application or filed that initial application, they have 1 year to withdraw it and pay all the money back. It used to be whenever they wanted to do so. And one gentleman came in and said, I know my mother lived to be 106, my father lived to be 105, longevity is on my side. So he filed the benefits at age 62, at age 70. He came in and said that he wanted to pay us all the money back. He wrote a check for $110,000, and we at Social Security did what? We took the money.
You took the money?
But then come 6 months later, the son came in and said that his father succumbed to life and is now in an internal life. And we said, we're so sorry. And the son said, well, we know that dad wrote a check for $110,000. Can we get the money back? And the answer is what?
No.
This is risky business. You got to make sure that it's right. So if you decide to take the benefits at 62, this is your decision. If you decide to withdraw that application, you have 1 year. After that, you're stuck with the facts.
I'm hearing a vacuum out there. Everybody 66 is going down to the local Social Security office, or they're click.
We want them to stick on it, click on it at www.socialsecurity.gov. You don't have to go in the Social Security office. That's a choice.
But I'm old.
After World War II, something happened in America. And guess what that was? It was a lot of loving going on. And it created many of us the silver tsunami, better known as the baby boomers. 80 million folks. We anticipate 10 to 15,000 people a day will be visiting the Social Security offices. We have approximately 1,240 across the country. So what that means is we can better serve you online, but you have a choice. You can go into Social Security office. You can call us up on the phone, make an appointment to file on phone, or somebody can call you.
And somebody's called us. Good morning.
Hi.
You're on the air. Okay, you're not on the air. So
the person has different choices in the way to communicate with Social Security to deal with us, but when they file online, we're automatically going to be processing that application the next day.
Okay. The young lady's back on the air. Sorry about that. Good morning.
Okay. Sorry. My spouse retired at the full retirement age, okay? But he actually continued working. So he received his Social Security check, and each year, because he was continually working, he got a small adjustment in the amount from Social Security. Now, after 5 years has passed, and he's now 71, he's retired from work. But he still is not receiving the maximum benefit. Close to it, but not the maximum. When he originally received the first Social Security check, no one ever told him what years they were using to compute his Social Security benefits. So how do we check to find out that maybe he should be getting the maximum benefit?
What happens is when a person files for retirement benefits, we're looking back for this gentleman at his 35 years of high earnings. And then what we do, when you go back to high school and college, we index those earnings to pay the person the maximum, to pay the person the maximum that we can. And what I mean by indexing is we bring those earnings up to current day value to pay the person the most that we can pay. So for him to be entitled to the maximum benefit, he must have contributed the maximum in for those 35 years of his high earnings. Right now, the maximum benefit is approximately $2,533 per month. Now, if he worked past his full retirement age and got that increment of 8% for each year prior to after his full retirement age, after his full retirement age, then that 2533 can escalate by 8% for each year of additional earnings. Then what happens is when you look at those additional earnings, say like he was receiving the benefit, still working, contributing to Social Security, at the conclusion of the year, we're going to look at those additional earnings, and that also can increase the benefit as well.
But isn't he supposed to be allowed to somehow say, well, what numbers are they using? Because we have the numbers from his tax returns for all those 35, probably 40 years.
Well, what you can do, and that's a great question, what you could do is visit Social Security's website at www.socialsecurity.gov. And what you can sign up for is what is called My Social Security Account. My Social Security. Remember the statement that you used to get in the mail that reflects all the earnings over a person's
life? I've had one of those for a lot of years.
Yeah. So what happens, you can actually pull up your record once you have established my account, and you can look at those earnings, And once you look at those earnings, we have benefit calculator number one, number two, and number three. Number two is so easy because what you can do is print that statement out and you could take those earnings and plug them in and you can work the computation yourself.
Okay. So, but that that name that you were saying, it sounded like my. Could you spell it?
My. Social Security. And once you go to our homepage at www.socialsecurity.gov, you're going to see Establish My Account. So if you already have an account, but what you want to do is create an account. And they're going to ask you some security questions to make sure that that is you.
Okay.
And then you could go in, and then we have the different calculators. And it's so easy.
Yeah, it is easy. I've done it myself for myself. And it's just like you think up a password. You know, it's like other accounts you have. You just create a password. As Lester said, you answer some security questions.
And
it's relatively easy to do.
If you find a discrepancy, you can contact Social Security. Anytime we make a decision at Social Security, a decision that one does not like, then they have the right to file what is called a reconsideration of eligibility, a reconsideration. So when you get that award letter that state the new amount and you disagree with that, you have the right to file a reconsideration. And we will explain to you in full detail why the decision was made. And a person has 60 days from the point that they were notified.
Supposing the earnings that they show for a particular year are different from what the earnings actually were because there was a merger between two large corporations, and they have, in other words, there were two W-2s at the end of a particular year.
Well, in other words, what we're going to do is look at the record. If there's any incorrect information on the record, then what we're going to need is a W-2 form or that self-employment tax return so that we can correct the record. But I would encourage you to take a look at it. Go to the Social Security's website at www.socialsecurity.gov and create my account. And once you have created your Social Security account, then we'll be able to see it clearly.
Okay.
All right, just a comment on the two W-2s. If the two W-2s are greater than what the Social Security base is for the year, the excess is not counted because it's returned to you on your tax return. So when you do that,
I'm not talking about the excess Social Security tax. I'm talking about the maximum amount of earnings for the year.
But it would not change. That number would not change, even though your two W-2s would be
greater. But you
would
have to add the earnings from one corporation to the earnings of the second corporation.
Not at all. No, do not.
Why not?
Well, because it's the law. Other than that, you take one number and add it.
From one company, and the company merged with another company, and the second half of the year you earned an additional $50,000 and you paid Social Security taxes on the whole $100,000, why wouldn't the whole $100,000 count?
Let's say the Social Security max for that year was $90,000, and by your example, you're now $10,000 over.
The $9,000, the $40,000 from the second.
Just add the two numbers together. We got to get to the first base. So if we add the two numbers together, and it's $100,000, like you say, and in that year the Social Security max was $90,000. By this example, one would think that we've paid in Social Security on $10,000 additional. One would think that.
But I don't care about the $10,000. I care about the total of $90,000, not $50,000.
Well, this is how come we want you to visit the website so that you can calculate that and take a good look at it. And if you got any questions, just give us a call. Visit our website first. And if you got any other situations, just give us a call at Social Security and we'll be able to take care of that situation for you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All righty. We actually had three emails this morning. The first one, what important points should one consider when applying for Social Security benefits? I think we covered that.
Well, the first one, the first point they need to consider, instead of going into a Social Security office, to go online and file their claim. And once they file their claim online, If they told us what their birth date was when they first got their Social Security card, and it's the same thing they're telling us now, we don't even have to see their birth certificate. And when they file online, John and Bob, it takes about 15 to 20 minutes at max for them to do so. And if they file online tonight, in the morning, they could be getting a phone call from Social Security saying they missed question 16B. If they don't get a phone call, they know everything is fine. Because what happens is once they file online, they're going to get a receipt and they're going to get a number. And they can go back and check the status of their application at any point that they desire.
All righty. Second email. Thank you, Lester. How is Social Security impacted by the Affordable Care Act? Finally, when do you expect Social Security to process applications for same-sex marriages?
Well, let me take the same-sex marriage first. Right now, we're still working on that legislation that was passed, and we have to determine just how to go about implementing that new policy that was passed by the Supreme Court. So we're still working on that. We are moving forward, and we're doing as expeditiously as possible regarding processing applications for same-sex marriages. We are taking those applications, but we're holding those for instructions so that we'll be processing those correctly. The Affordable Care Act, I would encourage folks to visit www.healthcare.gov, www.healthcare.gov. Medicare has the controlling effect on that. As far as people want additional information, they could also visit www.medicare.gov's website. But the website of importance for that issue is going to be www.healthcare.gov, healthcare.gov.
Okay. And the next one, I am 65 years of age and receiving a pension from a city that did not pay Social Security tax of $2,200 a month, and I will be receiving another pension that did not pay Social Security from the state of da-da-da-da. So the point is, we got an individual that's 65 years of age. They've worked in two jobs that Social Security was not subtracted from. Ready? So that sets the bar. I am currently receiving Social Security benefits of $112 a month since I worked 10 years in a prior life. In other words, before they started these full-time jobs. Will my state pension affect my benefits in August 2013, and by how much? So in other words, I got $5,000 worth of pension income from work that was not covered by Social Security. So I guess that's pretty close to $60,000 a year. And I also get $112 a month from Social Security. Let's call that $1,300. All righty. Will my state pension affect my benefits in... No. It will impact it by the taxes that Lester so accurately focused in on. So 85% of that $1,300 would be subject to income tax.
Yeah, and that's absolutely correct. Now, what this person is going to be affected by is called the windfall elimination revision of the law. And the windfall elimination of the law became effective January 1, 1986. And what that stated was this person who has worked in non-covered Social Security employment, they're going to be affected by this law because they didn't pay any Social Security during that time. It looked like prior to entering into those jobs that were not paying Social Security, they were employed and paying into Social Security. So they're going to be eligible for a Social Security annuity. And that's what he's talking about, that $1,300 a month. So they're going to get that. Now, what happens with the windfall elimination revision is that when we index those earnings, as what we talked about earlier, because I told the young lady, we look back to 35 years, high earnings, we index those to bring them up to current day value. If we know that a person is receiving a pension from non-Social Security covered employment, then we're not going to index those earnings, and we're going to pay them based actually on their actual earnings under Social Security covered employment.
Okay. Good. Final part to this question. Would it be better to delay my state pension or pensions and have it increased since my Social Security benefits are just enough to pay Medicare B? I don't know that I would reject $5,000 a month to save $1,100.
And again, that's a personal decision that this person must look at. They must look at their financial situation and just how this is best for them. We at Social Security cannot advise that person as to what's best for them.
Okay. Now, Lester, you just mentioned something, and it spins off of a call I got a week or two ago. Individual is widowed. CSRS their entire life. They have not retired, but probably will so in not the distant future, say a year, two, or three. Because the marriage lasted for more than 10 years, this person could collect Social Security based on the deceased spouse's earned income. There'd be no problem with that. And then when this person retires, they're going to be subjected to the windfall elimination, and probably the Social Security income will go away.
It won't go away. If the windfall elimination provision mathematically cannot totally eliminate the Social Security benefit. So once she retires and the windfall kicks in for her, yeah, she'll see a reduction in the benefit. But it won't be wiped out altogether. In fact,
what would be the highest reduction?
About 50%, maybe.
Right, 50%. So if it's $1,000 or more, take off $500 max. If it's under $1,000, it's cut it in half. So it's about 50%. That's the windfall elimination provision of the law. That's what affects the worker, that number holder, that primary individual. What affects the spouse and the widows and the widowers. Called the government pension offset provision. So in this example, this woman is receiving a government pension based on her own work, her own blood, sweat, and tears over the years. She's earned the right to be entitled to that benefit. So what's going to happen is if she files for her deceased spouse's Social Security benefit, say it's $1,000 a month that she could be eligible for, she's going to be affected by the government pension offset. So the government pension offset, what that's going to do is look at two-thirds the gross amount of her civil service annuity. Two-thirds, say $1,500 a month, two-thirds is $1,000. That $1,000 would be used to offset that widow's or widower's benefit on a dollar-to-dollar basis. So even though she's eligible, she would be entitled to zero.
Okay.
Now,
the windfall is different than the government pension offset. Basically.
That's right. These are two different provisions.
Two different parts of the law.
So they don't get you with one, they'll get you with the other?
No, the windfall elimination provision affects the worker, you.
Her own benefit.
That's correct. Huh. What affects the spouse and the widows and the widowers is the government pension offset because they're going to look at what they're receiving.
Right.
Now, there could be a widow or widower who's receiving a survivor's annuity. And have worked on their own under Social Security. They can still get that survivor's annuity under civil service and still qualify for their Social Security.
Okay, good.
Well, was her benefit her own benefit or was it her husband's benefit?
Her own. Her own.
Well, then we should be talking about the windfall, right?
Right. No. Her own benefit
CSRS,
as far as the CSR benefit.
The whole life.
Is her own.
Right.
But the benefit that she wants to file for is her husband's
question.
Social Security.
Was her Social Security benefit
zero.
Oh, so it's based on her husband's.
So that's the GPO.
So then she'd get hit by the GPO. Okay.
Got it.
Right.
I have to listen more carefully.
No, but this one traveled a twisted path.
Well, it's my wife is not going to get any of my Social Security because she's a CSRS retiree.
She's eligible, John.
But, yes, I know that.
But what she'll be entitled to...
She won't get anything.
Well, we can't say it like that, John. She's going to be eligible for 50% of whatever you're entitled to. Now, what she might be entitled to based on the government pension offset because she's getting her own civil service annuity might be zero.
It will be zero.
But then you might have worked somewhere in the federal government where she can get a survivor's benefit on you.
Okay, we need to survive this by a call. 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. 3080. And you can see here, we took it from the simplest stage and we got, I won't say beyond the toughest stage, but this is not easy to calculate when you get into the, what do they call it, GPO and windfall?
Government pension WEP. Offset. And the, just to recap, the windfall elimination provision applies to your own earnings if you had a pension from that wasn't covered under Social Security, your own earnings. The GPO only applies to any spousal benefits you could get or not get under Social Security.
And what I'd like to do is just bring some historical perspective as to why these two laws came into play. The government pension offset, what happened is in January 1977, the law was passed where men could file, because they were the breadwinners, they could file on their spouse's record. And what happened was these spouses began across to the country filing on spouses' records to get 50%.
Okay. We have a caller. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question for Mr. Austin. Social Security does not have the record of a whole year. I went to that mysocialsecurity.com and all.
Yes.
And basically, they are missing the taxes for 1998, which was paid in self-employment tax.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought maybe I'll get from IRS the official tax return. That is, they said they don't maintain that far.
You're not going to get it that far back.
Mm. So how do I iron it out? I did pay.
Sir,
I have a copy of my own tax return.
We can accept your tax return.
Okay. You don't have to get official copy.
Right. If you bring us your tax return, we can look at that's the one that you filed, and we can correct the record. And that's how come it's so important that folks go on to establish my Social Security account. It's four steps that they must take, because we want them to look over those records to make sure that those earnings are posted correctly. So at the time that you come to get it, everything is done. And with this doing it pre-need versus need, you're doing it before you retire, so we can get it straight right now for you.
I have one comment from the bean counter side. I don't know if you kept your checks from back then.
Well, that would be another problem, because the bank probably doesn't even have
them. No, if you don't have them, you know the bank doesn't have them. So I was going to say, if you do...
I may have a copy of it, but...
If you have a copy of the checks, this is very important, because it will support that you paid in not only your tax, but your Social Security, because you were self-employed. You get hit with a self-employment tax, and your tax return would mirror not only what the tax was, but you paid it.
Yeah, because what that tax return is going to show us, when you go down on a 1040 on line 12, or line 12 of the 1040 is going to show that you had a business. Then, based on you having a business, you're going to file a Schedule C. The Schedule C is going to reflect the name of the business, it's going to show the gross receipt of the business, and also it's going to show those business expenses. And once you deduct those business expenses from the gross, you're going to end up with a net. If the net is $400 or greater, then you'll file a Schedule SE. And all of this should be in the tax return, the Schedule SE.
Okay, but what about the Schedule Subchapter S?
Subchapter S's are not subject to Social Security tax.
Yeah. The salary is, but the profit is not.
So how do you...
If you're a subchapter S corporation, then you should have a W-2 form.
You don't necessarily have to. Some people live on the edge, and they don't
and
do
I
it.
Did.
I'm not saying that this individual does. I think I know him, and he's very honest. So he most likely took a salary so he would have the W-2. But if he had a friend that had a similar business that did not take a W-2, there's no Social Security tax paid.
And what I would say regarding that is nothing from nothing leaves nothing.
Boy, you're just full of songs. Nothing, but I'm
really enjoying your show and the questions. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All righty. So,
I mean, if he didn't pay any taxes on the Social Security.
Yeah, I know, but see, people don't always understand that.
Right, because if he's self-employed, line 12 on that 1040, talking about, do you have a business?
But with an S corporation, people just bristle at the fact of paying a salary, because they think it's a way to avoid Social Security until they hit Social Security age and say, why did you tell me I was not going to get anything?
And Bob, that's a very good point, because a lot of folks that are self-employed, they don't pay those self-employment taxes because they feel like they want everything right now. Well, then later on, or they pay a minimum amount. And then later on, they find out, wow, I was just up in Pittsburgh just a week ago. Gentleman was sitting down talking about Social Security. I don't know how the conversation came up.
I can't imagine either.
But he said that he went down to Social Security and he looked at his earnings record over the year and he thought it was a shame. And I said, a shame? Why did you say that? He said, it was a shame because I know that I could have done better than this. So he realized that he should have paid more into Social Security while he was self-employed versus some other things he was doing. So now that he's 65 years of age, he wished he had more to live on.
It was a little late in the game.
Yeah, and you rather quickly, correct me if I'm wrong, Lester, you recoup all those taxes you've paid rather soon after you retire and start collecting benefits.
That's correct.
That's why it's such a good deal.
What I used to say, when you take the benefits at age 62, it could take you anywhere from 13 to 15 years before you hit what is called the break-even point. And in the first couple of years, like you say, you're going to get back everything you ever put into it, and then it's just guaranteed.
And then it's gravy.
Well, when I say guaranteed, I'm talking about life expectancy.
Right.
Is it guaranteed? And now we have so many financial advisors, so many people that are making plans better than what we used to do, that they might want to delay taking their Social Security until the full retirement age. But again, that's a personal decision that a person has to make.
Well, if you can afford to postpone filing, yeah, you should postpone filing and get more money later.
May I ask you two questions? Are you okay, John, with the one you just asked? Okay, I didn't mean to jump in.
I'm done.
Okay. All righty. So I'm going to go to my Social Security, and I'm going to click stick and stroll. And I get to my account, and I pop it up, and I look at my earnings. But my Medicare earnings, for whatever reason, are not accurate. The Social Security is fine. Do I have an issue here? Do I need to bring that to anybody's attention?
Well, your Medicare earnings are going to reflect just what you paid in Medicare, and that's a very good point. Even though full retirement age, like I said, those individuals born between 1943 and 1954, full retirement age is what, 66?
Mm-hmm.
Medicare is still 65. So people got 3 months before the 65th birthday, the month of 65, and 3 months after to file for Medicare Part A and Part B. Part A, that's the hospital insurance. They pays for inpatient costs in the hospital, inpatient costs in a skilled nursing facility, home health care, and hospice care for the terminally ill. We say Part A is free, but that's based on you earning the 40 quarters of coverage, having 10 years of work.
If you always have 40 quarters, does it make any difference?
You're going to be automatically insured for the Medicare.
Okay, so if it's not accurate
but
over that,
you must file an application for Medicare. It's not automatic.
I know.
The Part B of Medicare that covers outpatient services at the hospital and certain services rented in a doctor's office. For folks that have low income or taxable income of less than $85,000, their monthly premium is $104.90 a month. Based on your earnings, it could be much higher.
Okay. Second question. You mentioned a little bit ago that now the old law was you could go in at 70 and pay back all your Social Security income and say, I want a do-over. But as I understand it, now you have a one-year do-over. Is that accurate?
That's absolutely correct, and that's what we were iterating earlier about.
Right.
That person, some people chose to do that, but now they only have a one-year.
Okay, so let's say that let's do some quick math. Let's say that Social Security is $2,500 a month. Let's just say that. Okay, and that's $30,000 for the year. All righty, so after the end of the first year, I'd be able to get 8% more, 8% of $2,500. I built myself into a box, I think is $200. Yeah, $200. And I'm going to give up $30,000 to get my $200 more. I don't know if I want to do that.
Again, this is a personal choice that a person has to make, and working with mathematicians such as yourself and financial advisors, I'm sure that you can make this clear and precise to a person that comes forth with those questions. But this is how come we have the benefit calculators at www.socialsecurity.gov. A person could work out and do what-if scenarios. What if I work longer? What if I earn this amount? What if I stop working, don't earn anything? What could I be entitled to? So with the benefit calculators, calculator number one, two, or three, person could establish my Social Security account. They could create that. The earnings record could come up in a PDF file. They can print it out, plug it into the calculator, and work those things out.
Okay. Now, just so that if there are any tax geeks out there like me, and that person paid back the $30,000, there is a tax deduction available for it because you did pay tax on 85% of it. Just as an aside, I'm really out there in the weeds with that.
Well, that's okay, but guess who Social Security's best friend is? Internal Revenue Service. So they would have to talk to Internal Revenue Service regarding that type of a situation.
Yeah. Okay, let's come on back into the outer stratosphere because we just crossed into the outer. So we're back into the oxygen area. All righty, I think we have 2 minutes. And Lester, can you say anything in 2 minutes?
Sure.
Okay, fire away.
I would encourage the American public to visit Social Security's website at www.socialsecurity.gov. Again, I say click on it, stick on it. And stroll through it. If a person has a question, we have what is called frequently asked questions. But again, that statement, we're no longer mailing that statement out. If you call us and try to request it, we're no longer going to send that out. But you can establish my Social Security account, and you can see your own statement online at www.socialsecurity.gov. And if you want to print it out, you can print it out. But again, keep it safe and secure. And when you visit Social Security's website, when you visit Social Security's website, I want you to know that's not Yahoo, that's not Bing or Twitter, but that's Social Security's website. So again, visit us at www.socialsecurity.gov.
Okay, very good. John, good to see you.
Same here.
Thanks for rescuing me with the whatever it was, GPO. Or
it's not
thanks
the
for
GPS,
listening, you all, and we'll be on next week and ready to take your calls. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.